Hello, this is Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, November 14th, 2024. City of Champaign, time for me to embark on a new chapter in my life. City Manager Dorothy David retires 12/20. A longtime public servant will step down next month. Champaign City Manager Dorothy David, 61, announced Wednesday that she plans to retire on December 20th after serving the city for 30 years, including 11 years as city manager. When asked about the reason for her decision, she told the News Gazette, "Few people are as lucky as I have been to fulfill my life's purpose among so many dedicated, caring public servants. My work with the City of Champaign has allowed me to accomplish many of my personal and professional goals. However, after 30 years of service, it is now time for me to embark on a new chapter in life." She sees retirement as an opportunity to slow down and live life with more balance. "I am going to enjoy spending quality time with family and friends, relaxing and seeing what new adventures the future holds," David said. She first joined the City of Champaign in 1994 as Neighborhood Services Director, was promoted to Assistant City Manager in 2007, and has served as City Manager since April 2013, city officials said. Her previous experience included work with the cities of Muskegon, Michigan, Kansas City, Kansas, and Kansas City, Missouri. During David's tenure as City Manager, Champaign consistently adopted balanced budgets, maintained a AAA bond rating, and navigated the pandemic, city officials said. When asked what she's most proud of from her time in the role, David replied that it is the relationships she has built within the community. "I am also gratified to have mentored so many employees and colleagues in the city management profession over the years," she said. "I hope that my example has been a positive influence on the next generation of public servants." The city manager is appointed by Champaign City Council. More information about the appointment of David's replacement will be shared in the coming weeks, officials said. Dorothy has dedicated the last 30 years to making a difference in the lives of Champaign residents, said Mayor Deb Finan. Thanks to her professionalism, Champaign is recognized nationally as a leader in government efficiency, ingenuity, and responsibility. Dorothy lives big shoes to fill in the city organization, but her hard work, dedication, and forethought has positioned the city for continued future success even as we move to this next chapter. Stepping down, not out. Search for Jones' replacement as chancellor will be in shortly. After nearly 9 years on the job, the University of Illinois' longest-standing chancellor has announced he plans to step down when summer arrives, but don't expect his seat to be vacant too long. Though the search process has yet to begin, U of I President Tim Killeen says the school is aiming to have a new chancellor seated by July 1, 2025, taking over just as Robert Jones leaves the role at the end of June. This is fresh news, and Robert Jones has been a great model for what a successful chancellor looks like, Killeen said. "As we prepare to launch a national search for this important role, we will create and share a comprehensive profile to find someone who will build on the tremendously positive trajectory that Urbana-Champaign is currently on." Killeen said the national search will begin as soon as possible. Jones announced his decision via a campus-wide email Wednesday morning. Looking back on his history at the university, during which Illinois schools faced a budget crisis, a pandemic, and more, "But it has been in these most difficult moments when I have gotten to see the strength of character of the students, faculty, and staff who choose to call this university their home," Jones said. This isn't goodbye, though. Jones is stepping down, not retiring. When considering a transition period between the chancellor and the next, Killeen said he expects Jones to be around and available to offer advice to his successor. "Chancellor Jones is not retiring and is currently considering an offer from me to remain with the U of I system to employ his considerable experience on strategic initiatives related in expanding the system and Urbana-Champaign's role and presence in Chicago, international partnership opportunities, and support for the search for a worthy successor to become the next chancellor," Killeen said. During Jones' tenure, the U of I has seen enrollment grow 26%, leading to a new record counts nearly every year. While universities worldwide dealt with new challenges during the COVID-19 pandemic, the U of I turned its resources to developing saliva-based tests that provided results quickly and were adopted widely in following months. Jones' time as chancellor also included the launch of the Carl Illinois College of Medicine and the Illinois Commitment, which provides free tuition to Illinois residents with family income below $75,000. We are at the high point in our 157-year history in terms of our educational and research impact. Next is a period of transition with our institutional strategies and collaborations, Jones said. This is an appropriate time to look toward the next leader who will build on that momentum and promote the bold ideas for which Illinois is known. He also oversaw the creation of multiple impactful partnerships, centers, and schools, including the Seibel School of Computing and Data Science and Seibel Center for Design. Both of those ventures are named for donor and U of I alum Tom Seibel. Robert Jones is a giant in the National Academy. He has sustained and enhanced the greatness of UIUC during a period of unprecedented turmoil and discord in higher education, Seibel said after Wednesday's announcement. He leaves UIUC better than he found it. His legacy is indelible. Jones has fans in the athletics department, too, with multiple alumni coaches turning to Twitter after the announcement to wish him well. Your unwavering support through the years created the environment where we've been able to elevate this program, said Illinois men's basketball coach Brad Underwood. It's truly appreciated by myself, our coaching staff, and every player who has worn the Fighting Illini jersey. Shauna Green, the women's basketball coach, has said she appreciated Jones' support, calling him an elite leader. Success always starts at the top, she said. From the moment I stepped foot on campus, your support for our program has been felt and is greatly appreciated. As did football coach Brett Bielma, who said his relationships with Jones is one of his favorites he's built at the U of I. Dr. Robert Jones is a leader in many ways beyond his role as chancellor. He is an ambassador for all of us, past and present. Thank you for being you, my friend, Bielma said. Five file for Champaign School Board race so far. Deadline is Monday. Current leader's husband is among those seeking a seat. Five newcomers have filed to run for Champaign School Board, including Ron Baker, husband of current board president Giannina Baker. Ron Baker is a nurse anesthetist at Carl Foundation Hospital Urbana and is the head coach of the Champaign Wrestling Club, according to the club's website. He declined to comment at this time. His wife's term is set to end in 2025. The same is true of fellow board members Sam Banks, Bruce Brown, Mark Holm, and Heather Vasquez. Vasquez and Giannina Baker have both publicly said that they do not plan to run for re-election. Amy Armstrong and Betsy Holder's terms expire in 2027, according to a list posted by the Champaign County Clerk's Office Wednesday afternoon. The following individuals have also filed to run for Unit 4 School Board so far: Fatima Ahmed, Christy Arnold, Tony Bruno, and Alvaro Al Molina. Candidates have until the end of the day Monday to file for the 2025 consolidated election. Ahmed is a University of Illinois alumna and biostatistician at the university. She is the mother to three kids, including two who currently attend Unit 4 schools, and who graduated from the district and is now at the U of I. It is important that our school board represent a diverse group of voices, and I am committed to fostering a spirit of collaboration and respect among all members, she said. I'm working together as a unified board. We can make the best decisions to support and uplift our students, families, and educators. Arnold, Bruno, and Molina all applied to replace board members Jamar Brown and Mark Tease. and Arnold and Bruno were both finalists for the seats, which were ultimately filled by Banks and Holm. Arnold, a Centennial alumna and Unit 4 parent, wrote in guest commentary in July that she has attended nearly every minute of every Champaign School Board meeting in person over the last 3 years. Arnold is a global controller at Nuveen Natural Capital. In addition to his latest bid, Bruno also applied for a board seat in 2012. The Central alumnus, Unit 4 parent and local attorney, is the co-founder of the Unit 4 Families for a Smarter Solution. Molina, a member of that same group on Facebook, wrote a letter to the editor in June criticizing certain members of the school board for what he saw as their tendency towards confrontation rather than dialogue, after Giannina Baker called for the censure of Holder. In addition to the Champaign filings, the Urbana School District 116 board member Jennifer Hickson, who was appointed to fill a vacancy in April, is seeking re-election. The terms of Tori Exum, Lola Jones, and Sitala Urizi Stanton will also expire next year. Additionally, Parkland College Board of Trustees Vice Chair Bianca Green is seeking re-election in 2025, and newcomer Dan Marker of Champaign is running for the College Board as well. Republican Leslie Dahlke Dzik has withdrawn her petition for City of Champaign Township Supervisor. Top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. Happy 90th, twins. On Monday, twins Lorenz Suits and Florence Frericks turned 90, celebrating with, among others, children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. Next on their agenda, reaching 100, said Julie Hedrick, Lorenz's daughter. It's been a fantastic year for the family, first siblings, who earlier celebrated the 75th anniversary of their confirmation at Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Flatville. They grew up on a farm just north of Champaign, attended Champaign schools, and to this day live close by, Champaign and Vermilion counties. The best thing about growing up as a twin, they agreed, was that they always had someone to ride bikes and play catch, even if Lawrence did have to do everything, Florence said. Their secret to a long, healthy life? Good family, friends, and spouses. Panel refuses to take action to protect Muhammad Aquifer. The Illinois Senate Executive Committee on Wednesday refused to call for a vote on a bill to protect the Muhammad Aquifer. The bill, introduced by State Senator Chapin Rose Muhammad, Republican Muhammad, called for the banning of storing carbon dioxide beneath the aquifer. State Senator Paul Faraci, Democrat Champaign, also introduced a similar bill. Rose introduced his proposal after Governor J.B. Pritzker signed legislation to allow carbon dioxide sequestration in the state, including potentially beneath the aquifer. Rose said he found it ironic that the same Chicago politicians who rushed the legislation into law over Memorial Day weekend now said they need more time to study the bill. Maybe if they got this right the first time, we wouldn't be in this mess, Rose said. Rose said Pritzker had ongoing negotiations behind closed doors on the sequestration issue throughout the spring session. When local legislators learned about those talks about 10 days before the end of the session, they sent a letter urging the government not to forget this is a sole source aquifer for central Illinois. There's no amount of risk that's acceptable. Just ban it, Rose said, adding he thought Pritzker also claimed to be an environmentalist and would understand something like this. The bill allowing the sequestration passed both chambers of the General Assembly, and Pritzker signed it into law at Archer Daniels Midland Company in Decatur. Rose said he doesn't understand the executive committee's decision not to vote on the measure. What's there to think about, he said. This should be a no-brainer unless the fix is in and there's a reason Governor Pritzker did this behind closed doors, because he knew a bunch of his buddies are going to make a bunch of money off of it. Teacher of the Week, Christy Lee, English and Language Arts, Hoopston Area Middle School. From one calling to another, when Christy Lee began her teaching journey as a substitute in 2019, the Oklahoma State University graduate was simply filling in the months that were slow for her day job as an agricultural journalist. Then in January 2020, she was offered a long-time substitute position, and she quickly realized that after 20 years in her previous career, she was ready to try something new. "I truly felt like I was making a difference with students, and I talked it over with my husband," she said. "It seemed crazy, but I decided I was ready for a change for the second half of my career." Lee is in her fifth year as an English language arts teacher at Hoopston Area Middle School, where she teaches students to take pride in their writing, including for the school newspaper. "I find my work important because our community is full of incredible youth from varying backgrounds, and I truly believe that every student deserves something who believes in them. Yes, I'm teaching grammar, literature, and writing, but I also believe we as teachers can be role models, mentors, and cheerleaders for the youth in our communities. I became a teacher because when I was a little girl, I loved to play school with my grandma on my dolls on her kitchen table. I took the long route to become a teacher, working at another career for 20 years. But once I got into the classroom, I could see the difference a teacher makes. I just felt that it was my next calling in life. In my previous career, I was a writer and photographer. It's also been rewarding to transfer those skills to my classroom teaching of ELA skills, as well as helping our middle school students produce a monthly newspaper, Cornjerker Times. My favorite or most unique lesson that I teach is, I love to provide my students the opportunity to showcase their talents and skills. 4 times a year, my 8th grade honors ELA students create a project and complete for the Lisi Award of Literacy Excellence, for which they vote for a fellow classmate's work. The trophy itself is one I won in 4-H in the 1990s. It's absolutely nothing special, but each student truly does seem to find pride seeing their name added to the list of students on the traveling trophy. The projects in contention for the Lisi including a suspense narrative, which students read around a fake campfire while eating s'mores, creating cover letters, poetry, and commencement speech, complete with students creating mortar boards and giving their speeches to the class, while pomp and circumstance plays in the background. As well, these students also select their favorite work of poetry to present it in a poetry gallery walk. Members of the school board, administrators, and other HAMS teachers are invited to view students' work while eating charcuterie in a cup. Students are invited to dress up if they choose. Jazz music plays, and they really seem to enjoy having a fancy moment to showcase their work. My most fulfilling moments on the job are when a student who has put up a tough exterior lets that tough exterior fall once trust is built. When a student knows someone truly cares about them and the person they are more willing to work and learn. It truly is rewarding to make connections with my students and let them know how I truly do believe in and care about them. I keep students engaged by I try to maintain a routine and system so students know what to expect each day. I also work to vary instruction methods and projects to keep students engaged and the material fresh. Also, building relationships with students creates more buy-in, and they want to work harder when they know their teacher cares. Something else I'm passionate about is photography. I have been a portrait photographer for the past 15 years, and I love capturing memories for so many special families. I spend many weekends photographing weddings, seniors, families, and babies. I also love following my 3 children and their passions, which include our 12-year-old daughter who participates in volleyball, cheerleading, and swim team, our 16-year-old son who shows cattle and competes in livestock judging, and our 19-year-old son, a sophomore at SIU, is pursuing a degree in radio and TV production. My favorite teacher and subject to study in school was Reba Benson, my English teacher at Owensville Middle School in Owensville, Indiana. I've always loved writing, but she truly made a difference in my life. Yes, she taught me grammar and writing skills, but she also taught me about being a caring, compassionate person and teacher. I think of her often as I teach in my middle school ELA classroom to this day. If I weren't a teacher, I would say a photographer, but I'm fortunate enough to also pursue that passion too. For something I haven't done, I would say a travel writer. I absolutely love traveling across the U.S. and overseas, and it would be on these it would be pretty incredible to be paid to go on these adventures. And we have Mike Hale's column, Records and Radio, of the Beatles and local disc jockeys who grabbed my attention. We begin this column with a quiz question. Name the two biggest selling Beatles albums worldwide. Answer at the end of this story. I continue to be surprised with the power of the Beatles to cultivate new fans, even though it has been well over 5 decades since the Fab Four were in the studio together. Certainly parents are a factor. My son and daughter were subjected to Dad's rock and roll growing up. No other artist in the history of rock and roll has been the subject of more books and single-subject magazines. Thousands of authors have devoted, dare I say, millions upon millions of hours researching every aspect of the Beatles. The pace of new written work about the Beatles hasn't slowed down, thanks to the ongoing flow of teens and young adults who have discovered the Beatles. On Spotify alone, the Beatles are ranked 103rd most listened to artist in the world and have over 36 million monthly listeners. The top 5 Beatles songs on Spotify: 1, Here Comes the Sun, followed by Come Together, Let It Be, Yesterday, and Hey Jude. I'm frequently asked about recommendations for Beatles books. My 3 faves, All the Songs, The Story Behind Every Beatles Release, a 2013 672-page book by Philippe Margotin and Jean-Michel Gustin. I own 10 different books that cover the Beatles catalog. This one is superior because it does a deep dive into the genesis, production, and technical details of every song. Jean-Michel's background as a musician, composer, and sound engineer helps take the song stories to a new level of detail. The Complete Beatles Chronicle by Mark Lewisohn, 369 pages and published in 1992. This is a day-by-day diary from June 5, 1957 through April 10, 1970. From studio logs to concerts to vacations, every page has a treasure trove of daily details. What happened in the studio hour by hour, number of concert venue tickets sold versus capacity, BBC and Radio Luxembourg productions logs. Radio Luxembourg appearance logs, rare photos, promotional advertising materials, the list goes on. A one-of-a-kind read. The Songs the Beatles Gave Away, a 528-page 2022 book by Colin Hall. On every trip to London, my must-stop store is Waterstones Piccadilly, Europe's largest bookstore with over 8 miles of bookshelves. I picked up this book that I had not reached America at the time. This book was inspired by 2009 BBC Radio 2 documentary by radio legend Bob Harris. The book's author was part of the team that wrote and produced the program. A truly comprehensive look at how John and Paul became prolific writers and the stories about the songs they gave away to other artists. On the radio side, I mentioned Chicago's Mary Dee as one of the early major market pop soul female personalities. Several readers mentioned Yvonne Daniels, the first full-time Big 89 WLS female personality. What a voice! She ruled overnight, plus Connie Zerzan of 560 WIND Radio, who in 1974 became the first early female pop music personality in the U.S. In January 1978, I made a trip to see you ahead of Bill Ernest's and Ernie Hall's purchase of what would be that summer become K104. I spent 4 days at Jumer's listening to local radio 18 hours each day to understand the radio landscape. Right off the bat, I was thrilled to hear multiple female voices in the market. Jody Anderson did mornings on WLRW, Wendy Rice on WPGU. Wendy went on to have an award-winning 35-year run at WXRT in Chicago. When it came to staffing WKIO, we were blessed by my first hire, Bonnie Lacey Taylor of Parkland College. Today, Bonnie is finance manager at Common Ground Food Co-op. So many terrific radio talents graced the local airwaves early in their careers before going on to make major contributions to the broadcast industry. I'll track down your DJ, Where Are They Now? Requests. Someone you heard locally or a DJ that made an impact on you when you grew up or anywhere in the country. reach out to mitm@whms.com or text me 217-351-9797. I look forward to hearing from you. Chuck Kaplinsky's The Screening Room, Grant a Revelation as Antagonist in Heretic. There's always been a sense of the mischievous about Hugh Grant, with the glint in his eye and the nature of his sly smile, the suggestion that a bit of malevolence may lurk beneath his charming mien has always been there. So I suppose it should come as no surprise that these traits would finally be put to good use in a horror film, Scott Beck and Brian Woods giving the actor one of the best roles in Heretic. Not only do they play against expectations where Grant's casting is concerned, but their script also has more than its fair share of smart twists. Too bad they fall to stick the landing, the third act regrettably falling victim to genre tropes and incredulous plotting. Grant is Mr. Reed, a retired professor and theologian, who, were you to see him in the neighborhood, would likely greet you with a big smile and wave. This, of course, is all a ruse, yet sisters Barnes and Paxton, Sophie Thatcher and Chloe East, don't know this and are immediately taken in by his impressive, seemingly wholesome charm. After Reed requests information about the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the two young ladies are dispatched to his house with the intent of making him see the light. Armed with a pamphlet and boundless enthusiasm, they're unaware they're stumbling into a trap. Reed exploits their naivete by posing increasingly complex questions about their religion and faith, asking them if they truly believe in their religion or are just saying so because they have been asked to. In brilliantly written and acted sequences in which Reed compares various religions with a board game Monopoly, he argues that all belief systems are essentially the same, adhering to the same doctrine, though there are surface elements that make them appear different. This is all done with a sense of mounting menace until Reed, revealing to the girls that they are trapped in his house, presents them with a choice. There are two doors available to exit, one labeled belief and the other disbelief. They must choose the one that best describes their state of mind, and it will lead them to freedom. Of course, it's not that simple, as their decision leads them to a series of other moral quandaries, their answers to each leading them, Reed claims, to the truth about the one true religion. Beck and Wood's premise is intriguing and their theme worthwhile, yet once all the fascinating talk ends, the plot holes begin to show. Much of what plays out simply doesn't hold water, with logic jettisoned for cheap thrills and nonsensical twists. As the story falls apart, nagging questions emerge. What is the history of Reed's house? It sits above a labyrinthine system of seemingly ancient tunnels. Much of what plays out simply doesn't hold water, with logic jettisoned for cheap thrills and nonsensical twists. As the story falls apart, nagging questions emerge. What is the history of Reed's house? It sits above a labyrinthine system of seemingly ancient tunnels. Surely its background could have been added some depth. The presence of other characters begs even further explanation. And just what is Reed's raison d'être? The story is begging for his backstory, as there's no explanation as to what makes him tick. It's a missed opportunity, as revelations about his past would have made him more human and terrifying. It's unfortunate the heady questions posed by the filmmaker are reduced to narrative detritus. Once the improbabilities start piling up and the hoary conventions are utilized, you're scratching your head over how a supposedly dead character is still alive. This has been Mary Moreland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, November 24th, 2024. Please stay tuned for Part 2.